What's your name?
Django.
Can you spell it?
D-J-A-N-G-O. The D is silent.
Hello and welcome to the RC Cinema Pod. Chris and I, you know, we just hyped ourselves up like so much on this next one that we're going to do. A movie that we both love, Django Unchained.
Django Unchained. Another part, the second part. I guess the third, but Kill Bill is one part, both of them. And now the second part of our Quarantino special. Here we are. We're both excited. We both love Django. I mean, there's so much to talk about as we transition out of kind of this Japanese martial arts, Western-ish style and head right into like a Western. Even I would call this, you know, a neo-Western vibe. And it's so beautiful that we have that, and also like just the shots, the breathtaking landscape shots that we see that you really haven't seen in cinema since like Shane or The Searchers or The Good, the Bad, the Ugly. And the way Tarantino just shoots is amazing. And let's just dive right into it, Ryan. I mean, this is, I'm excited, man. I'm
yeah,
pumped.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, if we're talking Westerns, baby, you know, at some point I'm going to bring up Charles Bronson. So at some point during this podcast, you would definitely hear me bring up Charles Bronson. That's my fucking guy, you know? So, you know, the thing is with this film, it completely subverts like a lot of your like expectations of this genre. You know what I mean? Uh-huh. It's like doing all these like little things and, you know, like, I want to start by saying that like, obviously we got to address like the elephant in the room. Like as soon, like right off the bat, you know, this film deals a lot with race, and I feel as though like in certain aspects of this film, you know, we might not necessarily touch on just because we don't feel it's like our place to like really talk about it. Obviously where we need to talk about it, we will. In certain aspects of it, but there are other aspects of this film, you know, it both in the culture and in the consciousness of everybody that we don't feel as though we're the right type of people to touch on these, you know what I mean? And well, I'll just leave it at that. You know, I think everybody knows what I'm talking about with this film, but we want to appreciate this film for like what it is, which is like this Western that Quentin Tarantino was trying to make. And it's like, and he's made other Westerns too, but like this film is like, is his Western. It's his like ultimate Western, you know, it's his Once Upon a Time in the West. It's his like The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. It's his The Searchers, you know what I mean? It's his John Wayne movie, which, you know, that's what we want to talk about with this. This is like, this is Westerns 101, you know, for like in the, because we know when Tarantino teaches 101 classes on these films.
Yeah. And you know, you're completely right. Like, you know, this is a film podcast. We're here to, you know, of course, with film comes a conversation about culture. Film is a visual art form that represents culture, that represents society and times, whether it's past, present. And there's a beauty in being able to tell a story through this. And there's also being able to separate, you know, the truth and severity of a situation that obviously is horrible, and being able to touch on a film that talks about it without us impeding our opinions on this. I mean, obviously Ryan and I are both, you know, very, you know, aware that this is a tough topic, and it's not our place to speak on it. It's not our place to have an opinion on it that is, you know, to be taken in any form of anything, as this is, that's not our thing. But our place and our opinion and our values are in cinema. And talking about that comes hand in hand with mentioning, you know, the things that this movie is talking about. And yes, Ryan, this is a beautiful Western. I mean, I would, as I said before, classify as like a neo-Western, you know? I mean, it's the landscape shots, the story. And I think that Tarantino beautifully illustrates, you know, this Western environment that he wants to create off the basis of films that we've mentioned, but also something that these films don't talk about in their time period, which is slavery and the horrible, disgusting, awful things that occurred during it. And yeah, of course, there is some grit and some brutality to it, and language in it is not very flattering and not, you know, for these times, not very good. And of course, it's hard to watch because of that, but it's also, let it be a reminder. Let it be a reminder to how horrible this time was, these times were, and how it's still ingrained in our society. And that's all I'm going to say about that. And I think we should move into the film. For those who have never seen Django, which, you know, you should see it. And if you haven't, it's okay. It's okay. Look, this is film 101. Welcome. Let us teach you.
Yeah.
The storyline is of a German bounty hunter working in America, teams up with an African-American slave who he frees to help find these three brothers who are wanted on arrest warrants. They end up forming an unlikely bond during these times and becoming bounty hunter partners, to then find out that Jamie Foxx, who plays Django Freeman's wife, is being held as a slave, and she has German roots, and she knows German, and this attracts Christoph Waltz's character, Dr. King Schultz, to helping Django, not only on his quest to gain freedom, but on his quest to save his wife and be truly a free man. Christoph Waltz's character is not of the typical white man of the time. He is not racist. He is not someone who believes in slavery. And he comes from Germany, which, you know, in our times, we might think holds a different connotation, which you shouldn't, because you never judge a person by where they're from. But for them, you know, the American was the racist. And we'll get into this more, but there's a beautiful point where this is illustrated where, you know, Christoph Waltz's character has really had it up to here with Leonardo DiCaprio's Calvin Candy, who was this horrible, terrible plantation owner and slave owner and Mandingo fight.
Dude, he's like literally the
just
worst.
Like the most worst guy ever. But there's this moment where, you know, he's really had it up to here. I mean, he's so sick of hearing all these racial slurs, all this views on African Americans that is just farthest from the truth. I mean, the dimple scene, the three dimple scene is something we'll talk about as well. But, you know, he's headed up to here and he says to Calvin Candy, who is a lover of French things, and he
French
says,
culture, man.
French culture.
He loves that French culture, yes. Baby. Monsieur Candy, right?
Exactly. And he talks about The Three Musketeers, which is written by Alexandre Dumas, who is a French writer who was also black, and he was from those times. And he says to Monsieur Candy, he doesn't like to be called Mister, and that gets him very angry. But he says, what would Dumas think about this? And I think that is one of the most powerful scenes in this film, because this guy who's like acting so cultured and he has all these books and these French names for his slaves or for the people that work with him speaking, you know, ah, bonjour and this type of things. But yet when it comes down to it and when he's confronted about this, oh, what would Alexandre Dumas think? Calvin Candy says, oh, he's a soft Frenchie. You know, completely disregarding everything that he's like, oh, I love France so much. I love these French things. And Waltz responds, well, Dumas was black. And that's a very, very pivotal moment. We're going to show it right here real quick. Let's take a look at that. The candy.
White cake.
I don't go in for sweets, thank you.
You brooding about me getting the best of you, huh?
Actually, I was thinking of that poor devil you fed to the dogs today. D'Artagnan. And I was wondering what Dumas would make of all this.
Come again.
Alexandre Dumas. He wrote The Three Musketeers.
Yes, of course, Doctor.
I figured you must be an admirer. You named your slave after his novel's lead character. Now, if Alexandre Dumas had been there today, I wonder what he would have made of it.
You doubt he'd approve, huh?
Yes, his approval would be a dubious proposition at best.
Soft-hearted Frenchie.
Alexandre Dumas is black.
Yeah, I mean, isn't that just like a powerful scene to have this whole, the slave owner's, you know, fake cultured world just flipped over? And Christoph Waltz is just, I mean, I love Christoph Waltz. Ryan loves Christoph Waltz. If you know Christoph Waltz, you're going to love him. Shout out my Austrian friends, you know what I'm saying? But yeah, let's talk about that. Let's talk about Christoph Waltz's role here. What do you think about that?
Yeah, man. I mean, like, I just feel like, you know, especially you of all people, you notice these things like more than anybody. Especially since like you are like a dual citizen in France, and like, I don't know, man. I just think, you know, when I think of this movie, I don't necessarily think of this particular scene, but this scene is like, you know, this is a pretty famous scene. This is like the one that everybody's like, oh, like Leo should have won an Oscar for this. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, oh, like he like bloodied his hand and everything like that. And, you know, we'll get into the scene where like he smashes his hand on the table and like he's like bloodied and all this stuff. And like, it's like this great dialogue scene. But like, I don't know. In this scene, I feel like it just, everything comes together with Monsieur Candy. He like,
everything comes full circle.
Everything comes full circle for him. Like, everything comes full circle for him. He's just like such a hypocrite. He's such a, like, an idiot. They, like, I remember in the film when they literally come and like they like meet him and they're like, oh, like, don't speak, oh, so he speaks French. No, he doesn't speak French. Like, don't speak French to him. It's gonna make him angry. Like, if you do that, like, he likes to think that he's French. Like, that's like a thing. Like, remember this. Like, he's a fucking rich dude and he can
he wants,
like,
to be all cultured and stuff, but he's not.
And like, that's the thing. And that's the thing. And that's like a huge thing with this film too, is that, you know, they justify, like, the thing that we can say about slavery with this movie is that, like, what Quentin Tarantino is doing is he's showing you how ridiculous the justifications for slavery are. You know what I mean? Like, they have this, like, old way of thinking. Like, the West had this old way of thinking, like, the old way of things being the way they were, you know? And they use, and what's, like, ridiculous is there's the one scene with, like, the guy quoting the Bible, you know? And this is like, this goes into like one of the best lines in the entire movie and like probably the most memorable line of the entire movie. You know, like, there's this guy quoting the Bible of the justification of his, like, of them like whipping slaves and everything like that. And it's like so stupid. Like, the, like, how stupid this all looks, like, especially now. Like, he wants to show you, like, oh, like, look how fucked up this was. Like, this, like, I understand that this was, like, one of the most messed up times. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and also, like, the crazy thing is, like, we're talking about the Brittle brothers, right? And when they're, where mm-hmm. the slave had, you know, she was being punished because she had broken something. It was so menial. It was like broken some eggs. Like, yeah. Really? You're getting whipped? Like, that's just so fucked up. And like, this is not that long ago. Like to put in perspective of like the span of like the world and its existence, slavery is not that long ago.
Yeah.
And you know, this is also like really hypocritical and contradicting, because like he's quoting this Bible, like these three brothers, like, and he's like whipping this girl for breaking eggs. Meanwhile, he's like a wanted criminal with his brothers for like robbing stagecoaches before he had this job as like a you know, I don't know what they're called, the foreman of slaves. I don't really know the word. It's so hypocritical. I mean, you're literally robbing people on, but you're clear of all sins because you're a white man and you're so special, you know. But like, oh, she breaks eggs and she's a horrible human being who needs to be punished and tortured. And again, back to the full circleness. John Brittle's time, your time's up, you're paying your debts. I like the way you died. And Jamie Foxx comes in, he kills him, and then he starts whipping the other guy. And it's an interesting way to see this theme of full circle come into play here.
Yeah, and it's crazy because he's what it is that he's quoting from the Bible is this verse about like man being like the master of beast. So like the implication is that like these like people are less than, are less like, and that's like that it's like just the most fucked up thing for a justification. And then you juxtapose that with like with Candy, who literally is like trying to be like all this like civilized person, but to show how uncivilized this practice is. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? That's mm-hmm. that's lit, like what he's trying to show you is like these people like thought they were like a civilized people, and like you need to realize that in like your own actions is kind of what I like the way I see it. You know what I mean? Like you 100%. Think like you think if you think you're civilized because of this, like you're not.
Remember me? I like the way you die, boy.
Yeah, and it's like you can fill your house, you know, you can get money and fill your house with all these books and paintings and fancy shit, but at the end of the day, like, And this is another juxtaposition that I find very interesting that Tarantino does, because not only does he, you know, have this separation between the slaves and like the rich white people, but he also has like the kind of hicks, poor white people who are like living in these like mud shacks who have to like make sure that the slaves don't run off and they're dumb and they don't speak well. But like, honestly, dude, how far off is Candy from this? I mean, he's just got the books and the fancy house, but like at the end of the day, his morals, his ideals, all his principles, everything that goes on in him is just as bad. I mean, he's literally making out with his sister.
Sister,
he's
it's making so out with his gross. Sister.
He is just as bad as those hicks living in that shack. It's a very, very, very powerful sentiment. And, you know, it's a sentiment that still runs deep today. I mean, you have these people now who, you know, they can be considered, you know, rich and have money and have jobs. And I know, you know, plenty of people who are like that. And, you know, they still hold either racism or they have, you know, something that just is, it doesn't hold up. You can create this facade about yourself, but at the end of the day, deep down, it's your morals that will count for what is really who you are as a person. And it's not, you can cover it up with money, silk, whatever. At the end of the day, it's not going to matter because you will be judged on your morals. And I think that's a beautiful kind of point that Tarantino plays with in this film.
Yeah. And so like, so moving on, you know, I definitely want to talk about Jamie Foxx's like performance in this film. This is like you know, it's for me, this is like up there. Like Jamie Foxx, I really feel like can play like anything, and like this is like, you know, it's one of those, like he does all these like great impressions too. Like I feel like this guy can like literally become anybody. Like he has like a voice for them. Like he studies like their mannerisms, you know. Like recently I saw online like that video of him like acting like Mike Tyson, and it's like literally the most like dead on accurate like thing that I've ever seen. Or like he'll just like studies like body movement, and he like knows the way he wants to be, you know what I mean? Like the way he is in this film is like so like you can tell he wanted to be like Clint Eastwood in The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. He wanted to be like John Wayne, you know what I mean? Like he's like this like awesome, like, bounty hunter guy. And that's so, and it's such a trope of the Western genre to, like, you know, like, I'm a bounty hunter and, like, this is what I do. And, like, you know.
Yeah, and I mean, I think, I mean, his performance in this, his performance in most things is absolutely fantastic. Yeah. He's a fantastic, have versatile you seen Ray? Actor. Yeah, Ray, that's another classic. Let's stay away from that Spider-Man, though. We'll stay away from
Stay away from Spider-Man.
But that's not really his fault.
Yeah, that's but let's get back to
Jamie Foxx. I mean, his performance in this is absolutely fantastic. I mean, it's not just him who's also fantastic. Kerry Washington, fantastic. Samuel L. Jackson, fantastic. DiCaprio, fantastic. Some say he should have won the Oscar for Best Supporting, but he didn't. And of course, oh, my love, Christoph Waltz. Oh, what a guy. And we'll get into him way more, too, in our maybe our next one that we have secretly planned. Yeah. But let's focus on Jamie Foxx. I mean, this is not an easy role to play. This is a tough role to play. But I think he created such a beautiful character. I mean, Django is not just some, you know, some action hero guy like a lot of these John Wayne guys are. He has such an emotional side. He has all sides to him. I mean, he's very, very, you know, dynamic in who he is as a person. And, you know, you look at some of the classic Westerns like, you know, The Good, the Bad, the Ugly, the Searchers, or whatever John Wayne you can pull up. And those are kind of one-dimensional main characters. They're kind of like, hey, guy, tough guy, you know? And Jamie Foxx, though, you feel for him in moments, you know? And not just as his character, you know, as Django as a slave, but Django as a bounty hunter, Django as a man searching for his wife that he has lost, you know? Django as someone who is finding his identity in a culture, in a society that forbids him to have it. I mean, you can put together these character tropes in so many different ways. And if you were to compare him to so many different characters in other movies, it would, you know, some of these would be just one character, you know? And I think that's absolutely fantastic.
You know, the thing about the Django character that I love the most, I mean, something that I just want to bring up is that, you know, there's these things that, like, the classic, like, Western guy does, you know what I mean? Like, the main character guy, you know, the guy in The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, everybody, like, gets, like, a little, like, little quip. I love the quippy lines from his character, you know? I like the way you die, boy, you know? I mean, like, there's harmonica, but, like, harmonica doesn't really have, like, a thing like that. Like, he has, like, the harmonica sound, and that's something we'll get into too, is like about the music in this film. But, you know, like, Clint Eastwood, he gets there are those with loaded guns and there are those who dig, no dig, like, there's that. So, you know, I just love, like, everything. This character is so, like, detailed, and it's so great. Like, the way he plays it and the way he knows how to be, like, because he is the main character, you know what I mean? For all intents and purposes, Christoph Waltz is just, like, the other guy, you know what I mean? He's just supporting Django in all this, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And but again, I mean, just a great pairing too, in terms of characters and stuff, like, to have these two guys, you know, such different backgrounds, and then they form this, like, bond, and together, you know, they do this journey. And we talked about journey in our previous podcast about Kill Bill, and it's a different type of journey here, but it's also a sentimental journey. I mean, two different walks of life, two different backgrounds, you know, to come together and do this journey is quite great. And let's get into this Western more. I think let's talk about it. I mean, the way he shoots this film, absolutely beautiful. I mean, the landscape shots, I mean, that's straight out of, you know, The Searchers, McCabe and Mrs. Miller, like.
You know, so this film, like, is, you know, has all these, like, tropes, but the thing is that Hateful Eight, like, which is, like, you can argue is, like, another Western, is not traditional in that sense, in that, like, it's mostly, like, close-ups and, like, all these, like, tight shots and everything like that. You maybe get, like, a couple wide shots in that film, but just to like give you kind of an idea of what like of what the outside looks like. But even like when you want to go outside, a lot of times you don't get to go there, you know?
Yeah, 100%. It's more like compared to like 12 Angry Men where they're all like confined in like a space and they have to like, you're seeing what's happening within the space, you know, whether in Hateful Eight, it's like the, at first the stagecoach and then like that cabin that they get trapped in. And then like in similarly to just like 12 Angry Men where they're like stuck in a room, you know? But like, yeah, this, you get like the full Western, you know, like landscape, like here's these mountains and desert and look at it. And look at this, like this could be 20 miles you're seeing in this shot. And you just see like three people on horses, like going by. And that's beautiful. And I love that we have to, that we don't just see like warm desert, but we see like cold, brutal mountains where they're like in the snow and bathing in like frozen ice water, and it's just beautiful shots. And actually, I want to talk about that scene too, where they're up in the mountains hunting those getting those bounties, and kind of in the beginning. And Django has this fantasy where he sees Kerry Washington, who's Brunhilde Hildy, his wife, and she's just there naked in like the in the river with him, and it's kind of fantastical, kind of German expressionism ish with it, with these like mist arising, and he sees her and then she disappears like that, and he's like, whoa. And like throughout the film we see this come again where he like envisions her, and it's like, this is it. Don't forget your vision, don't forget your end goal, no matter what shit you go through, no matter who's racist to you or whatever happens to you, like that's your end goal, man. Get Hildy, get the fuck out of the South and survive, you know? And that's powerful. And I like that Tarantino really plays with that throughout the whole film. And you just have this Western feel that I feel like has dissipated as, you know, film has left that Western era. And it really feels like it comes back to us here. What do you think on that?
Yeah, I mean, the thing is like modern Westerns don't really do what this does. You know what I mean? Like, No Country for Old Men doesn't really do the same type of things. I mean, they do it with like their shots and everything like that, like with the wide shots and everything. But aside from that, they're like very different from, or like the remake of True Grit is like a lot different from this too. I mean, you know, I feel like a lot of what Tarantino is doing in this is like, he wants to like show you like, oh, like, these are things that I learned from like The Searchers or like Once Upon a Time in the West. I'm gonna keep mentioning that film just because that's like,
oh, but it's important.
My favorite. It's like it's like my favorite. You know what I mean? You know, the scene where you see Django and Christoph Waltz's character bargaining for Hildy, and like I just always remember the part where like Leo bangs his hand on the table and he's like bleeding and he's like, put your hand back down on the flat on the table, and he's like okay, but like, dude, I need to grab my checkbook, like if you want me to give you this money and walk out of here, you know.
Mm-hmm. And that's a genuine scene, because I mean, a lot of people know this, but he actually cut his hand. That wasn't intentional for him to cut his hand and be bleeding. But when he smacked it down, DiCaprio, really hard, it actually cut open, and he just played with it and went with it. And that's a great addition. Except this, I don't know. Yeah. There's also like a part where he rubs his bloody hand on Kerry Washington's face. I don't know if that was shot after.
Yeah, he does. Like he does. It's like blood. It's like right in that same scene.
Is that his real right blood, though?
I have to believe, my thought is that he started bleeding. And then they were like, oh, we like that. Somebody go get the makeup department. Like,
I think that's what it was.
I think that they were probably like, oh, he cut his hand. Somebody sew him up. Like, he's going to keep going with it, but somebody sew him up. And then they were like, oh, okay.
Like, let's add this. A scene where
I mean, it would be cool. It would be cool if that's like his real blood getting rubbed on Kerry Washington. I'd be like, whoa, dude. Like, even she went there. Like, you got here. Even got your co-stars to go there. I don't know if that's true or not, but if that's the thing, Can you? I mean, personally, I would not be okay with it. I'd be like, you.
I don't think I would either. But honestly, at the same time, it is Leonardo DiCaprio, so maybe I would be okay with it. But I don't know. But that's a yeah.
I feel like you know, we'll talk about the scene that this bleeds into, but I feel like it's like kind of a testament to like the type of actor that he is. I feel like this is the first film that we've talked about with him in it, isn't it?
I think you're right.
I feel like this is the first film that we've talked about with him in it. And, you know, I'm sure down the line we're going to get to more stuff about him. But this is like, you know, I just want to like start off by like the Leo talk by saying like, he's one of the actors that is like willing to go there. You know what I mean? Like, regardless of like the type of person that he is in his personal life, which I think is like the like kind of funny at some points, just because he like loves dating like these like super young women. But like, you know, let the guy do him. That's his thing. You know, he's like one of our greatest living actors. Like, you know, let the guy do his thing. Let the guy. He doesn't perform for scale. He's a
real talent, and I really love Leo in this. And in this, I mean, some say that this was supposed to be the role that he won for best supporting, and he didn't. And so they feel like
it's okay. He got lead actor later on.
Yeah, he got lead actor the year after, kind of like a pity thing. I mean, great cast. He's just so committed, and it's hard to play that because. It's a fucked up character, man. It's a fucked up character.
But he's willing to go there. He's willing to go the extra mile.
Yeah.
I feel like the character itself is probably part of the reason why he didn't win. Best, like the fact that they were like, we're not gonna give it to the racist character, like I get, like, which is fine by me, man. That's fine. Like,
did Fassbender get it for 12 Years a Slave? That would be an interesting thing to find out.
I don't believe he did, because I know the lead actor was
Chiwetel Ejiofor. Hard to pronounce his name.
Yes,
but I've met him.
Oh, Chris got it. Yeah.
And
he's fantastic he's actor, fantastic drama, guy. Fantastic drama. Great, amazing actor. If you ask me, like that film moved me. That film like literally moved me.
Nominated for best supporting actor in 12 Years a Slave, Michael Fassbender, but he didn't win. But again, another film that we will probably do one day because it's a great film. And it's a tough topic, but back to Django, and I want to stay on this Oscar hunt because this is a thing that I feel with great passion. Django is such a great movie. I mean, it really is great in this, the way it's shot, the story, everything. But, you know, and this is the thing that I have a reoccurring issue with, and Ryan knows this, and we talked about this previously, but like the violence, man, I think Django really could have been the Oscar that Tarantino would have won for either director or best picture. But I think that violent scene, man, and I know a lot of people love it, and I have mixed feelings about it.
So
a little overdone, but yeah. I think that cost him the Oscar.
The scene that Chris is talking about is the scene that bleeds into the scene that I just talked about. It goes into, you know, Christoph Waltz shooting Leo right in the chest, and he's like, dude, like, I couldn't resist, like, not, like, doing that. I just wanted to see what would happen. Like, and, you know, like, it just bleeds into this, like, the, like, one of the bloodiest scenes. You know, we just talked about the Yakuza scene, and, like, the Yakuza scene, I feel like, is tastefully bloody, and I will give you that this scene is, like, a little over the top, and, you know, you've definitely swayed me in your argument. I would say, like, I can definitely see your side of the way you feel about this. And I do feel as though this scene needs to be in there. I feel like it's like very Tarantino-esque, and he's kind of playing on his own tropes. You know what I mean? Like Tarantino films have their own tropes themselves. Like, oh, where's this scene going to be? Where's the long drawn out, like dialogue scene going to be? And that's the scene at the table there, and Inglourious Basterds, it's in the bar, you know, like,
it's where's this violence
in,
gonna
in
come?
Reservoir Dogs, there's the yeah. like the at the diner, You know, there's like all these like different like long dialogue scenes that he has. He always has like the bloodbath scene, you know, in like Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, it's right at the end of the film, you know, like, cause you're waiting for that scene the entire movie essentially. And it's usually at the end, you know, it's or toward the end of some sort, you know. And I will give you that this is like probably the most over the top one. And I feel as though it makes this like weird shift in that part of the film that is a little juxting. And I get what you're saying. I will say that I think it's overdone. I don't think that it shouldn't be there, though. You know what I mean? I think it's needed because I think like having like a cool action scene like that is kind of indicative of like what a Western should be. There should be like some type of scene like that. You know, like in some movies, it might be like a train robbery, but like, or in The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, it's like the shootout and then they take forever to get, so there's like the war between the North and the South and they got to cross the bridge, and that's like the big action scene, I guess you could say, in The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, because they have this like huge explosion. But really, to me, the highest point of action in that, like the set piece, is like the standoff, you know what I mean? But like, you know, it's kind of indicative, but like, you know, I guess saying that now, he like Tarantino could have done it in like a different kind of way. You know what I mean? Like, who knows? I guess like another way you could say is like maybe like Candy like is like, we'll duel, like some stuff, something like that. Like, oh, you've like insulted me. Like, let's duel, and we're gonna do it like outside right now, or like in this house right now, and like.
Or even, man, like even.
But like I just feel as though they like this scene is like. Good. It is a hard shift, I will say, and I can see what you're saying, but I like the scene. It's just a little overdone.
And it's not that I don't like it either, and it's not that I don't think it's unnecessary. I mean, it's not that I don't think it's, you know, not necessary. I think it's necessary to have that climactic fight scene, but dude, like, come on, you're running through each hallway for like 10-15 minutes.
It is long. Just it is long. I'll give you that.
Splattering out of everything, like even The Good, the Bad, the Ugly, in like one of the climactic scenes, man. I mean, like, it's not like so much gore. So much, like, for what though? For what? Look, I'm fine with violence if there's a purpose behind the violence, and that where it's just blood coming out of everywhere. I mean, there's like 7 seconds of him just shooting a guy who he already shot, like just in the back, and just hearing him scream and just gore and blood pop. It's like, dude, okay, it's cool for like the appeal of violence, and I get that that's what you want to play at, but like at a certain point, like it takes away from the story, and you know what? It might have taken away from your Oscar win. So I'm sorry, Tarantino. I'm sorry, people who are like, oh, I love this scene, like shut up, but like it's true. In a film perspective of it, it is something that was, it's too much. And I'm not saying that the violence shouldn't be there. Again, it should. If he wants to put violence, you can put violence. But you don't need blood coming out of some dude's neck and leg and ass and arms and whatever for 25 minutes. And then what? And I feel that movie kind of goes on the descent. After Chris, I've always said this since I saw Django when it first came out, before I even knew Ryan, before anything. I've always said this, that movie goes down after Waltz dies. After Waltz dies, it kind of just, and you know what? It could have. You could have still had a similar take with a violent scene like that and have the same exact thing. And it would have told the same thing.
I feel like it's also because of Leo leaving, because they leave at the same time. They leave at the same point in the movie. You know what I mean? I feel like that's my takeaway from it. Like, I feel like Django can exist without Christoph Waltz, but like it's harder to exist without Leo. You know what I mean? Like, he just blows him away. And then, I mean, what is it, like 10 more minutes of the movie, 15 more minutes of the movie after that? It's not like, it's not a large chunk of it. You know what I mean? I hate that Christoph Waltz dies in this. Like, I was like, dude, like, really? You're going to kill him? Like, it makes no sense to me, you know?
But because I think that's representative of the times, too. Like, this guy who believes that slavery is wrong, you know, he can't live in that society, so bye-bye. But also the guy who's like mega, you know, slavery guy also dies. So it's like a balancing out of the two evils, even though not really, because they still live in a fucked up world.
You know, something that, you know, I just thought of is that, Christoph Waltz has kind of a similar vibe to another film that I feel like we should check out at some point. He has a similar vibe to Christopher Walken's character in King of New York. You know, in King of New York, he's this white gangster that like hangs out with all the black guys, you know, and it goes from there, but he like draws that similarity to him, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And like, it's interesting to think about now. It's just a thought that came to my head, and you know, eventually we'll get to King of New York. You know, Chris is admittedly he's never seen it, but it's so great and has so many funny lines in it. It's just such a great gangster film. You know, back to westerns, we're not going to talk about that right now. So you know, I can agree that it goes downhill after a while, but but it's like only 15 minutes of it, and it just drags out in that scene, and it's just like it's the blood and gore scene, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. It's the needed Tarantino blood and gore. Yeah, I mean, I want to talk like about Samuel Jackson's character in this. I mean, yeah, he still has that loudness, that fuckery to him, that, you know, I can curse and do whatever for the, you know, role that he's playing, but it is an interesting role, and it's a very powerful role, because it is someone who, you know, it's hard. It must be hard to play that character, because it's someone who has so much tried to be above or be something and not be this someone who's broken. And he has betrayed his values, in a sense, to survive. And that's hard. And not just in this situation, but in situations like, you know, in any situation where it is someone who has to make what he can out of a situation, and you can judge him and you can, you know, say what you want about him, but you don't know in that situation what would happen. And it's a tough role to play.
Yeah, he's essentially like betraying what his identity is in order to survive in this world. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I feel like Samuel Jackson had, you know, he's one of Tarantino's guys, you know what I mean? He's one of his guys, you know. He has them. Like Kurt Russell is one of his guys, you know.
Yeah, I mean, like another one of his guys, like Michael Madsen too, that's a guy. I mean, we know Tarantino loves to, you know, use his guys. He's very specific of what he wants in his actors. But let's talk about the music a little bit in this.
Yeah,
in this
movie. I wanted to get to that. I mean, like that's like one way that he like kind of flips the genre. Like he wants to like show you the classics, but then he wants to like also further it
and modernize it.
Yeah, he wants to modernize it in a way. Like he uses like a Rick Ross and Jamie Foxx song that like I was listening to in pre-pro about like, and it's like, it's so different, you know, to like have this like rap song in this western where you, and then he also has like this western sound, like sounds and everything like that, that are like, that remind you of films like The Good, the Bad and the Ugly. And
yeah, and it has this like western kind of beat to it, you know, this rap, even in the rap, like the 100 Black Coffin song, like, it's like that western kind of Good, the Bad, the Ugly vibe, but then it's like hits in with the rap, and that's so sick. Like, that's so cool, because like you're combining like a modernized, like what we are now,
sound with, yeah, it's like a different sound
with that. And Tarantino was, I watched this interview, and he's talking, he's like, and I love this as someone who, you know, wants to get into directing, and it's kind of similar to how I think of, you know, stories when I think of them too, is like, it's really cool, because he was saying like, oh, when I'm starting to come up with an idea for a script, I go into this room of mine that I have and have all this vinyl and just start listening to music, and I'll start picturing like, this is something I could see in this scene. And then that's how he like starts to get a story. And I find that to be really interesting and really prevalent to, you know, this film. I mean, to have like all these Western sounds and stuff like that. And like these, you know, old kind of like whistling melodies that you would hear in like The Searchers or something like that. And then you have this juxtaposition of that with like modernized, you know, like rap music predominantly done by African Americans, specifically in Django. It's a really cool juxtaposition because it just combines, like, it modernizes the situation for us in a sense. It brings us out of it for a second and into like a modern life for a second, and better than like Gatsby did.
And the thing is, I mean, I've never really watched Gatsby, but it definitely does not seem like my type of film. But like the thing is that they put this raps. So they put 100 Black Coffins in this film at a certain point, like when they're rolling up to Candy's like Candyland, essentially. Like they're rolling through it, but they're rolling up to it too.
Yeah, you just talk trash to Walton Goggins too, right before they play.
And they play the song, and rap music is like stereotypically and like most often remembered as like a fight the power kind of sound and music and type of music, you know, like Public Enemy. Mm-hmm. Tell you best, fight the powers that be. Like that's what it is. It's rap music, you know. It's like fuck the world. It's like what rock is at a certain point and everything.
Of course.
Like it's,
and it deals with a lot of racism too, because early rap, I mean, starting even like the late 70s when hip hop and these kind of things were coming, you know, in New York City and stuff. I mean, you know, it was anti-police, anti-racism and like police brutality and stuff. And we don't have to get into that because, you know, that's a separate issue. But
it's just like, yeah. And it's also like, then we're going to start talking about music in like a different context and everything like that. And we want to really like kind of focus on like what it is in this film. And, you know, like that's the thing, man. Like, I feel as though Tarantino, more than anybody, he has like the music being a character in his films, you know what I mean?
Definitely.
And, you know, I mean, Scorsese does it too, you know, it's just so, I love when the music is like a character, because like, then it gives you this, like, you remember the movie when you hear the song.
Of course, dude. Who did that for you will always be remembered by me. That's the famous John Legend song that's in Django.
That's so great.
Yeah, I listen to that, and I love a soundtrack that plays to a movie, and I think it makes the movie so much more powerful. And I think that Tarantino has a special affliction, and we'll talk more about this in the Inglourious Basterds podcast that's going to be coming next in our final segment of the Quarantino special. But Tarantino not only likes to find the music that he likes and put it in, but he likes to, you know, reuse and recycle music that has either been in past movies or even in like small things in life. I mean, for Kill Bill, for example, in the opening of Kill Bill Volume 1, you have this like cool, funky, groovy 70s like music that you would hear on like a TV, and it's saying feature presentation. It's like do 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 do, like some cool like funky little vibe like that. And just those small little things like play a huge role in the grand scheme of things, not only in what music you're using, but also in how you're telling the story. And I think it's very good. And I'm sure you must have a big, you know, role in obviously the music being picked for his movies, which is interesting for a director, because not always does a director do that.
No. No, I mean, sometimes they rely on other people to like pick the music that they're doing. But like, you know, I mean, it's even, you know, he at the end of the day, Quentin Tarantino is like, he's making genre films. You know, it's like he knows where he has to put things, but he understands that any film, especially if it's a genre film, should be taking the old and using it, but also furthering it with a different kind of vision for what the way he sees it. And I you know, you can shit on him all you want for just making like another stereotypical Western, but I think he is trying to put his like flair on it. You know what I mean? 100%. He's trying to make it like, listen, like, you don't have to like follow all these rules. You know, you can kind of do your own little thing about it.
Use what you have, use what you know, and you know, use what's been done and create your own. And, you know, like an example of something that's like been done and is kind of in the beginning. I mean, we have this, well, first I'll start by even saying like, you have this beer scene, which we're going to show in a second, where they first get into the saloon guy runs out because there's a African-American in the saloon. And he runs out and they, you know, sit down and they have a beer, and there's this beautiful little sequence of Christoph Waltz pouring the beer, and he's tapping the little beer thing on, and we'll show that right now. Let's take a look.
Sit down, my boy. What kind of dentist are you? Despite that cart, I haven't practiced dentistry in 5 years. But these days, I practice a new profession. Bounty hunter. Do you know what a bounty hunter is?
No.
Well, the way the slave trade deals in human lives for cash, a bounty hunter deals in corpses. Prost.
I mean, isn't that such a nice shot? So beautiful. I mean, the cinematography, fantastic. And let's juxtapose it then later in the film to Candy. I mean, when Candy offers a beer to his winning, you know, I hate to say this word, but in terms of the film, is winning Mandingo fighter. A disgusting, horrible thing, but it is in the film.
Yeah, that's one of the most brutal parts of the entire film.
Yeah, and it's an absolutely disgusting thing. And if anything it should do is just show you how cruel and terrible, you know, again, we were talking about, not to get too off topic, but we were talking about how you can hide with all this culture and stuff, but that is just a disgusting act. But anyways, we have this scene where, you know, Leo DiCaprio's character's Mandingo fighter wins the fight, and it's a reward to have this beer. Oh, you've earned it after not dying in a fight to the death match. You can have this tall boy. And it's just disgusting to just see this different, this juxtaposition of not only culture, but also just characters. I mean, you have this horrible guy and this guy who's just trying to help someone out. I mean, but both scenes are, you know, beautifully shot and beautifully displayed. Whether the content is beautiful, it is not. It's imperative to really talk about this. And what do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, it helps that it's well shot. You know, like, you can say like, oh, like, look at this terrible thing, but you know, at least they shot it well. Like, yeah, I don't. I mean, it's like, It's so disgusting to watch, you know. I don't have much to say about it. You know, there's a lot of scenes in this film that are like hard to watch, you know, and they're hard on rewatch too. I think the parts of this film that you would rewatch this film for are the like more the fun parts, you know. The I like the way you die, boy. Like the bar scene, you know, those are the scenes that you're going back for. Or people will go back for the blood, like the bloodbath scene at Candyland. Mm-hmm. You know, it's kind of like, you know, those are the things you want to come back for, because this is like a very rewatchable movie for sure. Like, I feel like any Quentin Tarantino movie is like vastly entertaining. And that's the thing, is like, you'll never have to go too long without watching something that you're entertained by. You know what I mean? And I feel like with with most of his films, he always has these, like, it's like we said, it's like he has these tropes about him that he does. Like, he has, like, the dialogue scene. He has the big bloodbath scene, you know? But, like, he's doing one thing, and, like, I feel like he doesn't want to fail the viewer. He wants to give you the price, like, the price you paid for admission. You know what I mean? Like, you came to see this movie. At the very least, thing I could do is, like, entertain you. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like he's definitely one of those guys that's like, oh, if you paid to watch this and you weren't entertained, then, like, I've done wrong by you, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. And, you know, I mean, it's a tough film, but if there's one thing you can take out of it, it can just show how brutal this period of time was in history. And yeah, it's hard to watch, but at the same time, I think that showing some of this stuff, again, we discussed what I think was overdone, but showing some of this stuff, it's hard to watch, but it's part of our history. It's a shameful part, but it's good. It's a good way to, you know.
So to segue, you know, I feel as though this film has, like, it's vastly entertaining for sure. You know, I feel like we'll talk more about, like, our top films in our next one. I feel like we'll definitely have a little segment about, like, how we would rank our Quarantino films. And our next one will be Chris.
Yeah. Inglourious Basterds. Yes, another great ones of Tarantino. Yes, we're going to be doing Inglourious Basterds. That will be the wrap-up segment of this Quarantino special. We figured that, you know, why not? It's a great film. It's a, you know.
Some would say it's his best.
I would say it's up there at the top. I would definitely, you know what, I'll save that for tomorrow for my list.
Yeah, we're not going to give away our list. We're not going to give away our list just yet. Secret right now. Exactly. You can speculate.
But yeah, it's a great film. And I think, again, we're going to have the similar themes that we can talk about of, you know, more different outside of the Westerns and the Japanese cinema that we talked about, but more into, like, the 1930s, 1940s, not only pre-World War II, but also, like, German Expressionism, his love for Fritz Lang, who's the phenomenal German director of things like M, you know, and then talking about war and the brutality that war is. We both have connections to this story, too. I'm from a French background. You know, a lot of my French family, you know, survived or didn't survive through World War II. And Ryan has Hungarian roots as well, both that were affected by World War II. So it'll be interesting to delve into that while keeping on the pace of talking about, you know, old cinema and the Tarantino's likeness to that, and also how Tarantino shot this one, Inglourious Basterds. So, yeah, I mean, Django Unchained, great film, powerful story, powerful message. Fun to watch, and another
also
Tarantino.
Difficult to watch.
Yes, it's also very difficult to watch, but I think if you look past some of the things that are more, you know, commercial, you can find a very deep, powerful, and yes, that's sometimes harsh story to watch. Anything from you, Ryan, on that?
No, that's about it. We'll see you in the next one, man.
Yeah, thanks for joining us again on this Quarantino special. We're excited to bring you guys Inglourious Basterds tomorrow and our list of our 9, not 10, 9.
10 maybe eventually.
Yeah, 10 maybe eventually. Maybe we'll do another Quarantino special, but hopefully it won't be under quarantine. Maybe the Q can just stand for Quentin. But we're excited to bring you those lists tomorrow. And thanks for tuning in to another episode of RC Cinemapod. I'm Chris. That's Ryan. Peace.